This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to What's News Dunedin, brought to you by DOS Turkish Cafe, the radio show that spawned from the 24,000 plus strong local Otipoti Dunedin What's News Dunedin Facebook group. The group has been putting the social back in the social media since 2020 with respectful adult debate and a sense of humour. I'm your host, Richard Knights. On today's show, we'll be talking to our wonderful guest, Zach Nichols from the Amped Music Project, who'll be telling us a bit more about themselves and what they do, as well as helping us look back at the posts that generated the most interactions over the past 7 days on the What's News Dunedin Facebook group. And those posts this week, unsurprisingly, Christopher Luxon surviving the leadership of the National Party coup. Another week, another council meeting, another ejection for Councillor Ong. And Waitati residents wanting people to slow the F down. Welcome to the show, Zach.
Kia ora, Richard. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. But before we get all to the serious stuff of the news and bits and pieces, we do have our, I don't know if you're a member of the group, so like, and there's no requirement to be a member of the group. We have a Punday Monday post, right? So what happens on Monday is I invite everyone to bring their best dad jokes and their puns. Whoever gets the most laugh reacts, and it's as simple as that, gets their joke brought on the show on a Friday, and we see whether that joke transcends from, you know, the written word into the spoken word, and whether it's a groaner, whether it's a giggler, whether it's like a over your head one. So this is this week's joke. I've heard this one. I've heard like 100 times, but I still love this one, to be fair. I just took a leaflet out of my letterbox that said I can have sex at 82. I'm so very happy. I live at 74, which is not far to walk home afterwards.
Not bad.
Not bad, absolutely, exactly.
I've not heard it before.
No, have you not? No. I saw it and Tom put it up and I was like, yeah, no, that's one of my old faves, if that makes sense. So now, and again, before we get into the serious stuff of talking about the news, we have my three pop questions, right? Mm-hmm. So these are questions that I've decided get under your skin and tell everyone that's listening exactly what they need to know about Zach. Right?
Okay.
There's no science involved here either. It's just me making up some silly questions. Great. But so first question. Cream teas. So where you have a scone, you have jam, you have cream.
Mm-hmm.
What goes on first, the jam or the cream?
Interesting. Well, I would say I'm actually vegan, so I probably wouldn't have any cream at all.
No, fair enough.
But you got to butter the bread first.
Oh, yeah, well, butter. Yeah, let's assume butter's there already. That's part of your scone, right? So once your butter is on your scone, is it jam first or cream first?
I feel like you'd go jam. Like, how's the cream being dispensed, I think, is a good question. Because if it's a, what do you call them, the shooty bowl thing.
The squirty cream, yeah.
Squirty cream. You can't spread on top of a squirty cream.
No, exactly. Absolutely. No, I agree. The science supports what you're saying. I mean, like, it's much easier to put cream on top of jam than it is to put jam on top of cream.
Exactly.
And that's the way that the Cornish do it. Is the right way, jam, then cream. If you move over the county borders in the UK and the southwest to Devon, they do it Bass Aquas, which is like, and like,
how do they get their cream?
I got no idea.
Do they have like a jar of cream somewhere?
You'd have to ask one of the strange folk from Devon because it doesn't make any sense to me, mate.
Can't trust them, I reckon.
No, I don't think you can. That's why people keep going through Devon and just stopping Cornwall.
Of course,
I think that's why tourism is better in Cornwall. Anyway, second question. So that's the only question you get wrong on my show, anyway. By Zach, so now you passed that.
Good.
Everything else is gravy.
So I'm allowed to stay.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, totally. Great. So I've had to kick a few people out.
Oh, fair.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'm talking to myself for now. That's not true. We just growl at each other across the desk. Second question. Who is your favorite Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
I got to get the name right. I was a massive Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan when I was a kid. Donatello.
There's no wrong answers with the turtles.
Am I right when I say Donatello was the purple one?
Don't ask me that.
I think I'm right. I feel like Donatello's blue.
See, if I get that wrong, Zach, I normally get a text from my wife telling me I've got it wrong because she's a massive Turtles fan.
I see.
And if I say it live on air and I get it wrong, I get the angry text later on. All I know is they're Renaissance painters.
I'm going to say Donatello is definitely the blue one. I'm wrong.
That's fair enough. Raphael is red. That much I do know.
Raphael's red. Michelangelo's orange. Maybe Donatello. No, I think I'm right. Donatello's purple. Donatello's the best.
That's fair enough.
Got the quarter staff.
Well, there you go.
Bit techie. Exactly. The funny one.
They're all good fun. Yeah. Anyway, now the third question is a bit of a thinker. So, take your time on this one.
Okay.
Would you rather be able to see 10 minutes into the future whenever you wanted,
mm-hmm.
or be able to erase three mistakes from your past?
I mean, I don't know what I'd erase. We're going to go see 10 minutes into the future. Let the past be. That's what's made me who I am, Richard.
Well, absolutely. No, there's nothing wrong with that. And again, my wife will tell you, I've never been wrong, so I've never made a mistake.
Of course.
mine's the future as well. I'm thinking, I just like to see 10 minutes into the future, like now. Like, you see another 10 minutes in the future, like, what am I having for lunch? Like,
yeah.
You know, or
I could see what questions you ask me and I could start planning what I'm going to say.
Absolutely, just start prepping, couldn't you? Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, absolutely. So no, I think I'm with you, I say, because I've never made a mistake. So I can't believe I just said that live on air. I'll probably get some comments from someone.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the news. So let's go back and talk about the stuff. Now, obviously, the big news for the week has been the national leadership coup, whatever you might want to call it, because it started off really kind of quite quietly at the beginning of the week. There was going to be a national caucus meeting Tuesday evening, and they're going to be doing it online. They're in recess for the week, so it's a fairly normal thing that they all catch up as a group and kind of talk about their stuff, which is, it's like, team meeting, right? That's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And then suddenly, as Tuesday started to go through, there's talk about him, Christopher Luxon, resigning before this meeting. And then suddenly it became an in-person meeting on Wednesday morning. So suddenly everyone was in, got dragged into a meeting at 9:30 on Wednesday morning, got brought to Wellington to see the boss. we talk about, people, they've got the numbers to roll him and all that kind of thing. So like 3 hours later, Christopher Luxon comes out, spends, I think it was 76 seconds talking to press on a media stand-up, basically saying, "We're united. I've got all the support of all the party." And then about four or five minutes after that, got rid of Chris Penk, and sacked him. Took his portfolio away from him. And now Chris has announced that Chris Penk has announced that he's leaving politics.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that?
I mean, it just sounds like Christopher Luxon saying another classic lie, one of the classic lies Chris Luxon likes to say. Seems like the only thing that'll get you fired from government is questioning his leadership rather than being a bit racist
Absolutely. Like being not only being a racist, like Winston Peters was, but being a racist, consistently being a racist, refusing to apologise for being a racist, and basically putting himself above everyone else. And that was actually a comment I made on the page when I put the story up yesterday or the day before, was that it seems that if you question your leadership, then which I think is actually a positive of democracy, that you can question leadership, right? This is not a dictatorship. This is like you can lose your job. Mm-hmm. But if you actually say something racist, not just saying something racist, but saying something racist as the foreign minister, right? This is your place in parliament. Your place in parliament is to engage with other countries for the benefit of New Zealand and for those diplomatic relationships and to maintain and uphold those. You are the person that should be the least racist person in the government, and you are the most overtly racist person. You can't lose your job for being racist, but you can lose your job for questioning the guy that actually 5 million people around the country are actually questioning at the same time as well. Because let's face it, Christopher Luxon hasn't been front and centre for the last 3, 4, 5 weeks. Like I don't know if you've noticed, but I've noticed that he's absent, right?
Yeah.
The guys doing the stand-ups are the people like Chris Bishops and the Erica Stanfords and the Nicola Willises. They're the people that are actually there talking about policy. Christopher Luxon seems to be just upsetting small business people at fairly small engagements in Rotorua and those kind of things.
Mm.
And he seems to be causing more damage than good. And I guess for this, my question here is how badly have National shot themselves in the foot with this? Because it's only 3 months or 4 months since April. April was the last time he had to stand up and say, "I've got the backing of my party." And we're 3 months out from the election, 4 months after the last one, he's now standing up again going, "I've got the backing of my party." And you know that's not true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I wish I could be as bad as my job as some of those people, but
yeah, because we'd lose our jobs, right?
Look, absolutely.
If we were as rubbish at doing stuff,
nothing would get done.
And
nothing is getting done is like half the issue.
No, but the thing is, election year. Like again, what do we expect to get done in election year? I mean, one of the questions, one of the things that is being hopefully put to the public in as part of this election is potentially the extension of periods of time, right? Where I come from, like, government period is about 5 years, between 4 and 5 years. And at least you get the opportunity to do something in that time. You know, if you have a couple of, you know, you could be in power for 10 years and only had two elections, right? 3 years doesn't seem like enough, because no sooner have you got your feet under the table and you've, you know, the person that you've decided is the best finance person in the world, who literally doesn't know how to use a calculator, you know, works out what's going on and gets the right advice, they can be out the door because another election's coming and it's a different person. Which I don't think is fair to any party, is my point. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair to National. I don't think it's fair to Labour. I don't think it's fair to Greens. I don't think it's fair to anyone, because you're in a flip flop kind of situation. What do you think?
I'm not sure. Like, my thoughts are, if you do a good job, you'll get re-elected.
Yes.
If you do a bad job, you won't get re-elected. I think True. 3 years is plenty of time to find your feet, especially if you've had a job in politics for, you know, hopefully a good amount of time, if you're going to be a minister for something huge and important. I mean, it really shows, I think, the leadership. If you pick bad people for the job, they'll do a bad job, and they won't get the hang of it until right at the end, and then they'll just use their failures to blame the next government.
It is really strange, because no one in this country, no one stands for government on the back of their ability to be the best finance minister or the best foreign minister or the best, you know, whatever minister, right? They basically go, hey, look at me, I support these general trends of policy, vote for me, throw loads of money at it, they get voted in, and then sometimes they get tapped on the shoulder and go, well, you're minister for sports.
Yeah, let's all pick jobs out of a hat, basically.
I didn't know how to kick football at school, you know? That's what you're the finance minister. I struggled with basic arithmetic, you know? But again, it's like, they don't stand for those roles, do they? The shadow, whatever. Like, you know, the same as in the opposition, right? You're suddenly given a portfolio and you kind of go, oh, okay. Yeah, now what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, and the Prime Minister has basically, he barely cut his teeth in politics as a backbencher. Do they call them backbenchers here? I don't know if they do. They do in the UK. Like, you've got the guys, because there's so many bloody rows of politicians. They've got the front bench guys, the guys that actually got the ministerial positions, then you've got the backbench guys. But you've got so many people, he barely cut his teeth, and suddenly he's the Prime Minister, because apparently this country needs a CEO.
I don't understand why people think that being a businessman and being a politician are the same job.
No, you see that local politics too. You know, people get voted in, well, because he's a good businessman.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
You've missed the point.
Yeah, like
at that point,
Prime Minister, the government, they're working for the people. They're the employees, not the employers.
Exactly. What you actually want to go is go, he was a great worker. You know, she was a great worker. They were a great worker. You know, they brought great ideas. He was a good business person, because actually, a lot of government, a lot of local government, has got stuff that will do a business.
Yeah, definitely.
Because part of local government is not making a profit.
Exactly.
Which is the opposite of business.
You're there to spend money, not make money.
Yeah, exactly. It's the opposite. It's genuinely the opposite of business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, making a profit is not something you're not there to make a loss, but you're not there to make a profit either. You're not there to kind of go, hey, look at us. We got the taxpayers and we got pockets full of cash. Mm-hmm. That's, again, it's like, you know, you're there to provide services and roads and infrastructure, all those kind of bits and pieces. And we see it in local government as well. And that's an interesting segue into the next news story is, literally, it's been another week, and I was talking about this on last week's show, another week, another council meeting, and Councillor Orr has got himself ejected from another council meeting. And it's madness. It's genuinely madness. It's genuinely, I stood for local election. I stood for local election a couple of times in the last by-election as well. It was unsuccessful. Drives me nuts that people like him are sitting around the table when people like me are not. I mean, that's and that's not a jealousy thing. That's me looking at it and kind of going, I would at least know what a question is, right? I would at least know to respect the chair. I would at least know to bring sensible, you know, attitude and respect to the position that I'm being elected to. That much I can tell you I would do in spades, above and beyond some of the people already around the table. But I watched the meeting. I watched the beginning of the meeting because someone messaged me. He's getting aggy again. I was like, well, hang on. So I jumped on to I wasn't thinking to. he was aggressive from word go, right? So his attitude was like genuinely aggressive from word go. Halfway through the meeting, he's decided to jump onto Facebook, types some absolute not word salad nonsense like he does every single time he kind of jumps to Facebook. And it's obviously found its way to the mayor, and the mayor's kind of gone, you're disrespecting the meeting, you know? And whether that's – I'm a little bit torn between whether that's something you could bring up at the meeting anyway. But he was asked to remove it and apologise. Then he spoke over Andrew Sims. Then because the Deputy Mayor Lucas wasn't there, so Andrew Sims was kind of stepping in because the mayor can't rule against her own point of order, right? And then he's talking over. He won't take no for an answer. He's arguing. It's not a debate. It's actually like there's a ruling that's gone on. You know, these are your standing orders. If you're not prepared to come to the table and work to the rule of the book that you've been elected under, what are you doing?
Exactly. It's just another case of a politician being terrible at their job and still getting to stay. Like,
absolutely. We can't get rid of them until the next election, right?
Surely there's got to be
unless he commits a crime that has a custodial sentence of more than 2 years. He doesn't have to be convicted for those 2 years. Let's say it's a crime that there's a custodial and he gets like 3 days community detention. If he's found guilty of a crime that has that length of sentence, possibly to the worst case environment, then and only then can he be removed from his seat, or he can be declared medically unfit. And again, that would be, I would guess, on medical or mental health issues. But unless you're physically taking yourself to go and get that declaration, then no one can force you to go and. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like the rest of the councillors can't go, right, we need to get your psych exam, and then go. They can't do that because that would be wrong anyway. I mean, from a political point of view, that would be wrong, right? Because they could then use that power against someone they just didn't like.
Yeah.
But we'll start with him. That's literally it until either he commits a crime, a serious crime, is convicted of it, or we vote him out at the next election.
And I guess we'll just have to vote him out at the next election.
We will,
I hope.
But it's been probably, we haven't got to a total, we're not even been a year in this yet.
Oh, man.
There's still two years, 2 months to go. Not that I'm counting. But maybe I am. So it's an interesting one. But it's also a distracting one. That's
exactly.
The other side of it. You're actually genuinely there to do a job, right?
And everything we hear about the council at the moment is just this person's ejected, this person's ejected. I mean, usually that one person is ejected.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same person. And to be fair, rightly so. But it's a distraction from what we elected these people to get stuff done. And they may be getting stuff done. But because our eyes are over here looking at the clown show, we're not necessarily appreciating the work that's being achieved
exactly
on the other side, away from the madness, away from the crazy. And that's the problem that I've got, is actually like it's difficult enough to be a counsellor, to do a good job, to be recognised for doing that good job, right? Because it's a tough gig, right? You can't win. No one's ever going to praise you for doing anything. There's always going to be half the people going, that's the worst idea ever, and half the people going, oh, it's the best thing since sliced bread, right? So it's hard enough to be recognised for good mahi, right? But then you've got this going on, taken away. And it must be incredibly frustrating for the councillors who are literally just trying to get on and forget their politics, forget whether they're Lee Vandevis and you disagree with everything Lee says, or whether they're Mandy Mayhem and you disagree with everything she says. They are trying to do the best for their electorate based on what they believe to be the right thing, right?
Exactly, yeah.
But it's just madness. It's just ongoing ongoing madness. See what I did there?
That was good, that's good. Put that in for the pun of the week.
Okay, exactly. I don't think I'm allowed to qualify for the pun of the week. I don't know, I've never tried. Maybe I'm sitting here telling my own jokes.
One with the platform. You can do whatever you want.
I could. Don't let that power go out of my head, Zach.
Okay.
Last subject of the week, topic of the week. Waitati. The wonderful people out in Waitati, at the Blue Skin Bay, and some fantastic parts of the world at Orokanui and all that kind of stuff. There was an opinion piece in the paper this week about asking people to slow the F down, right? And because that corner, as you go into State Highway 1, that corner where you sort of peel off to Waitati, is a notorious spot for accidents, near misses, frightening, scary behaviour where buses stop and kids get off school buses and stuff. It's an absolute nightmare. But the problem is that no one in New Zealand wants to slow down.
Yes.
And that's something I've noticed, like, forever, right? It's like there is absolutely no expectation in this country that the car in front of you should ever slow down or, God forbid, stop, right?
Yeah.
Because I see it all the time. Like, I'm driving, I'm turning right, I'm indicating, like, a long way back, I'm indicating, I'm slowing down, and then suddenly these cars are, like, so quickly, like, because they're not expecting me. They've got no belief that I should be, I'm allowed to do that, right? And I've been in so many almost where they swerved out the back of me, like they've suddenly realised last minute that they've actually, like, and you're kind of going, I've been telling you for a long, like, I've been, the brake lights have been on, the indicators have been on, I've been trying to ease you into the process, like, but you still didn't expect or want me or believe that I should have the right to slow down. And that's one of the things around Waitati. I think personally, slow the whole thing down for, like, 500 metres, 60K, like 60K, 80K, whatever, but 100K through there on a fairly blind bend, sharp bend, where they've got a drop-off point on the other side of the road where the petrol station is. I'm talking about going north on the left-hand side of the road. And why does anyone disagree with that? That's the bit I can't get.
Yeah, like safety should always be the priority, especially when it's like young people, our kids getting off a school bus. Yeah. Like,
that shouldn't,
I feel like everyone should.
But even
that
shouldn't matter, shouldn't it? I mean, even it shouldn't matter to these kids. It should, like, if one person gets off a bus, whether they be four years old or 94 years old, anywhere on the sliding scale in between, they should have an intrinsic right to be safe at that point in order to
definitely
get to where they're going.
And it's like it's one of those places where people just think, oh, no one's there. No one's ever around there. So I don't have to think about it. And that's exactly the places where you stop paying attention, where there'll be just one local crossing the road, where there'll be some idiot driving down that Waitati Hill or something. Just
and it's got some big vehicles there. I mean, it's not an unbusy stretch of road.
Right? Oh, I mean, there's too many big vehicles just in the world at the moment. I don't understand why cars just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's horrible.
I don't get it. No, I don't. There's more SUVs on the road than ever before. Like, yeah. When I was a kid, and that was many moons ago, and it was horse-drawn carriages that went back then when I was young. It was, you know, it was cars. You know, you had estate cars. If you needed a bit more space, they added another row of seats behind the first two sets, and then but they just stretched the car out. They didn't make it like 6 foot in the air and.
Exactly.
And now we're all driving these great big, whopping great big SUVs.
Yeah.
I had a bloody company ute.
Oh, wow.
Once. But I was working from a recruitment company. recruitment company. Like, I had absolutely no need.
Not too much off-roading.
No, I don't think I ever got it muddy. Genuinely. Man. But they've given me this ginormous 5 meter long, diesel chugging ute they could have stuck me in a mini. Not the minis are very small. Minis got bigger, but like they could have stuck me in a little small three, four-door car.
Yeah.
And my job and my – it wouldn't have changed me. Wouldn't have changed my ability to do my job effectively and give me the perk of having a car that I could drive, right?
Yeah. And like the advertising around those is always – it's bigger, so it's safer. But the reason it's safer is because if you hit a smaller car, unsafe for the smaller cars.
Yeah, exactly. It's the smaller
cars. You can't
cars.
See kids over the top. The lights are like higher up, so they're just shining straight into the eyes of the smaller cars. There's so many issues with the way cars are going these days.
But going back to Waitati, you've got all these cars screaming down that piece of road. They've got a right and an expectation for safety, and that's the main part. And what I can't understand is the pushback. Don't slow me down.
That's weird.
Hang on. I'm going to slow you down to 60 for 500 metres of road, right? So at half a kilometre at 60 instead of 100, you're going to lose maybe 2 seconds off your journey time.
Yes.
It is literally a handful of seconds. Like, it's a handful of seconds that you will have no genuine ability to do anything with. You can't collect it and put it in a bucket and go, oh, I've saved those. You know what I mean? I've got some. You can't. Those 5 seconds are happening anyway, but you literally it's going to slow you down for 5 seconds.
Yeah, no one's in that much of a rush.
But no one's died in the process. Like, to me, everyone, we had the same thing out in Tyrymouth. We've had the same thing. There's a whole load of people live out. I live out in Brighton. Tyrymouth, they want to, from Brighton to Tyrymouth, they want to drop it down to 80. It's 100 at the moment, right? It's a wiggly piece of road that they already say that most cars only do about 80 on that road anyway. So they want to change the signs to say 80 rather than 100. And that's really not going to change the speed that the cars drive because they're already doing about 80 yeah. anyway, right? So it's going to slow a few cars down, but the majority of cars are going to get through from the same, doing the same thing, do the same speed, going to get to the plate, and it's literally minimal. And the furore about the, you know, doing that for what is literally a handful of residents, there's only like 700 people out there, is mad.
I mean, I just think...
Don't slow me down.
Sir. Drivers are very entitled, I always find. Like, I mean, just look at the George Street remodelling.
Yeah.
You know, we can't drive both ways. Oh, no. Yeah. We can't park. It's like, who's trying to park on George Street anyway?
Why are you trying to park on George
exactly.
Street?
Exactly.
I get it if you've got mobility and accessibility issues.
Exactly. Me, and that's what those parks should be for.
Yeah. Me, I would turn all of the parking on George Street into mobility only. I would do the same on the two roads that tag along to that as well because actually, like those people need it, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, chuck all the access. But again, it's just that it is that madness about like why are you so entitled? And I'm a car driver, mate. I mean, I genuinely don't ride a bike, don't do a lot of walk. Well, I do a lot of walking, but only because I have to.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get on the bus, all right? Can't get a train because there aren't any trains. I drive everywhere. I drive everywhere. But I understand that is, A, is a massive privilege to me, and B, I've got no expectation about a park outside the place that I want to get to. I've got an expectation that I can park within a reasonable amount of time and walk if I need to. I'm able-bodied. I'm fortunate in that regard. So I'm not talking about this for people that have issues, you know, walking 20 meters, 10 meters, 100 meters, whatever. But there are so many drivers, so many people that meet my demographic, right, that have this this entitlement and this privilege. And I don't know where it comes from.
Neither, honestly.
Yeah, but just don't slam down.
Everyone's in a rush for some reason.
Yeah, and life's not that busy. Life's not that urgent. One of the reasons I came here rather than staying living in the UK is because it was so much slower pace.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't mean that in a derogatory sense, right? It was just an easier, more relaxed way about going life because that rat race over there is like 24/7, you know, 365, and it is crazy. Here, it's starting to become more 24/7, more 365, but actually it's still reasonably relaxed.
Mm.
Right, we're going to get on and talk about you, but before we do, we're going to get a word from my wonderful sponsor.
Dost Turkish Cafe serves authentic Turkish and Middle Eastern food, made with love, right in the heart of the city. Kebabs, shawarma, loaded fries and more, all made fresh to order using quality ingredients. Their family recipe falafel is a favourite, and they're the only place in Dunedin serving their popular cheesy baked potatoes, loaded with your choice of fillings. Generous portions keep people coming back for more. Dost Turkish Cafe, just up from the Octagon at 15 Princes Street. Dine-in, takeaway, and delivery.
Have you eaten at Dost?
I have. I'm a very big kebab fan, and I do have to say Dost, I think, are the best in the city.
Oh, that's strong words.
It's close. I think Hazur's... Sorry, I shouldn't be mentioning other kebab shops.
Hazur sponsored the show as well.
Hazur are great, but I think between those two for me.
I think they're awesome. I too am a big fan of kebabs, right? I'm a big fan of food full stop. I actually bumped into someone the other day who'd never met me but knows me from the What's News Dunedin Facebook group, and they sort of kind of went, I was expecting you to be a lot fatter. Because I'm always talking about my food, you know.
Oh, fair enough.
It's like, I didn't think you'd be so skinny. I'm like, yeah. But anyway, laugh about food because it made me hungry. Going to talk about you. Now, I introduced you as Zach Nichols from the Amped Music Project, Amped being A-M-P-E-D, because people listen to my voice and wonder what the thing I said, something completely different. Maybe give us the 5 minutes Cliff Notes version of what that is and a little bit about Zach Nichols and how you come to be in this position of being in charge of this Amped Music Project or being part of this Amped Music. I don't know if you're in charge or not. You'll tell me in a minute. Give us the five minutes Cliff Notes version of that and, you know, try and explain to anyone listening, if they've never heard of that before, what we're talking about today.
Cool. Yeah, so the Amped Music Project is a free high school band and musician mentoring programs. So we put on 4 workshops and 4 gigs, all ages, all alcohol-free is important to us as well. Rangatahi will sign up, they'll come along, maybe they have a band already formed that they'll, you know, use the project to play a few shows, and they'll, you know, upskill in terms of a bit of stuff about the industry and about songwriting and about recording and gig etiquette, all those sorts of things. Or you'll come as a solo musician, or you can come just as someone who plays an instrument who's looking to be in a band. And we find with music, it's one of the most important things about it is the community around it. And with Amped, we sort of start forming that community from when kids are as young as 13.
Right.
And they're already playing shows, and then suddenly we have, you know, they turn 18, they can play the bars and stuff, and we have incredible musicians. And it's great to see. Like, I do think in Dunedin we have some of the best musicians in the world, and I think having Amped to help nurture that with the young people is really great. For me, I've been playing music since I was 15, basically, and I was a part of the Amped project in its initial year in 2010, back when it was called the Chicks Project.
So that's 16 years ago.
16 years ago.
Can I just say, running. Zach, you don't look old enough.
I'm 32.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Don't be sorry. I'm 54. Like, you know, but I do look old enough. That's the whole point. That's the difference between you and I. Is mm-hmm. You don't look old enough, but I do.
I see.
So you've been involved in 16 years.
Well, I did it as a high school student 16 years ago,
yep.
Aged out of it, and then I'd come back every few years and do like a little mentoring role,
yep.
Talk about songwriting, talk about sound checking or something. So I've kind of been in and out of it for all those years. But this year there was an opening. I have a lot of experience working with like teenagers and stuff. I've done a lot of work in the theatre. I used to write and direct shows at the Playhouse Theatre, yep. Where we kind of get casts of about 30 high school kids and write a show, direct a show for them and put them together. So I do have quite a bit of experience working with younger people. And I think all of those combinations of musician work with young people did Amped before. Kind of perfect combination to help me land the gig. And it's been a lot of fun working on it.
Is that a paid role?
Which is
cool, because I think so much that happens in our arts community, and music included, is unpaid, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's the struggle, right? So it's not easy. It's double hard to be a musician, right? Because straight away, first of all, you've got to be talented. You've got to be able to play the damn instrument in the first place, right? I can't play anything. It's one of my wishes that I could. I can play the piano a tiny bit.
It's never too late to start, Richard.
You say that, Zach, but you never know. But again, let's say you've got the talent, right? The cost of equipment is expensive. The cost mm-hmm. of like gig hire and all that kind of stuff is expensive. And half the time you're working for free, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a real. There's a real passion required in order to be part of it, and it's very easy to lose your way in that. Like I would imagine, not ever being a musician that's had to go through this, but looking in from the outside, so often things aren't paid, right? So I'm pleased to hear that you're paid. So the Amped project, how is that funded? Where does your ultimately your wage come from, if that's not too rude a question?
We have quite a few like sponsors. People like the DCC and lots of other ones. I can't remember them all off the top of my head.
No.
But a few different funders. And we also have a Give a Little campaign running at the moment.
Okay. Yeah, talk to us about that.
Yeah. So because Amped Project is free, it costs a bit more to put on. So we can actually pay the artists and the musicians and people who come through to help the rangatahi with all their stuff. And we really like to pay people for their work if we can. So to keep it free, sometimes we need a little bit of extra help. If you go to the ampedmusicproject.nz, or you can go to any of the Amped Music Project socials, there'll be links there. If you have 50 cents, if you have $100, if you got 10 grand you want to drop on us and you just have that lying around doing nothing, feel free to head to our Give a Little.
In a box under the bed or something. Like
exactly.
Just, yeah, exactly, because there'll be people out there kind of going, well, I wonder where I left that 10 grand.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they'll be cleaning under the bed and it's like, hang on, that's where it was. I'll give that to Amped.
Exactly. So you can find that on all our socials and stuff. But other ways people can support is, you know, the free versions. Come along to our shows. Come to the gigs and see the great young Amped bands. I believe it's 12th, 13th, 19th and 20th of September we have our four gigs.
Right.
Where we have some great older local bands who are coming to play. We have Emily Esplin, we've got Tiny Pieces of Eight, we've got Death on the Maiden, and we've got Dale Kerrigan all playing alongside our great young bands who some of them will be playing their first show ever. Some of them, it could be their 10th, 20th.
Right.
See how great they are.
And that's fantastic. And there's nothing like live music, right?
Exactly.
Like, there's nothing like live performance. There's nothing like going to the theatre and seeing someone actually walking on the stage compared to going I'm going to go and watch Spider-Man this weekend, right? And yeah. I'm going to thoroughly enjoy it. But it's nothing like watching a live show or a live band or someone actually plying their trade.
Mm.
Within touching distance, and show and putting everything out there, right? There's something about it.
Mm.
I've always wanted to be in a band.
It's not too late, Richard.
You keep saying that. I just need some friends. I need some friends to actually kind of go, let's put together a band, right? I can't play an instrument. I'm just rubbish.
You don't need to be good. Make punk music. Okay, that's exactly. What it's for.
That's what punk. No disrespect to the punk music movement, but I'm a reasonable singer. Like genuinely, so I actually love to sing. So, but it's like, but I haven't got a, you know, I've never had a band, right? But I can point to like two times in my life where the most fun I've ever had has been performing for other people.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like the moments that live with me forever. And I'm not saying I was performing brilliantly or anything like that. All I can say is that they are moments that, if I lose all my other memories, they'll be the last to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's genuinely how like live music performance kind of connects, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you're offering this service for school age rangatahi, and it's free.
Completely free.
Right. So, and they find you, if a young person is listening, I don't think I've got a very young audience, but if there were young people listening, or the parents of young people listening, and they've got a talented child, or even just not even a talented child, just a child that wants to be better or be involved, and they can come to, they can find that out as well on your page as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You'll be able to find our sign-up link, which I think we'll have sign-ups open till about next Friday, so about one more week.
Right.
And then the program starts the week after, so we're getting very close. But, yeah, if you are a young person who plays an instrument or even doesn't play an instrument but you dabble, sign up, come along. You might meet some great other musicians that will be, you know, help you learn, help you play, and, you know, make some good friends.
Yep.
If you're the parent of a young person who plays music, maybe give them a nudge, get them to sign up. It can be scary to sign up for something like this, but it's so rewarding.
So again, what are they signing up for?
Mm-hmm.
So in the sense of, you know, are you signing up for singing lessons? Are you signing up for guitar lessons? Are you signing up? You know, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I know that that's not what they're signing up for. So I'm using that.
Because
So what, you know, if you're signing up, you're kind of sitting there going like, well, what am I getting? What would I get for free, you know, and accumulation of a lot of other people's efforts? What am I signing up for? What am I signing up to learn? What am I signing up to be part of?
So it's mostly about how to be a gigging musician in Dunedin and in the rest of the country. So we talk about like gig etiquette, how to be in a crowd, how to sound check is an important one that can be quite daunting the first time you do it. Sound checking is when you get up in front of nobody else in the bar and the sound person will, you know, make you sound good before the show.
Right.
I thought I should explain that.
Two.
It's exactly that. Check, one, two. Check.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
When the drummer comes out, just goes two
on the for about 20 minutes. Yeah, that's everyone's favourite part.
What's going on?
We'll do that. You can learn about live sound and how to do live sound as well as lighting. It'll be fun. We're going to teach a bit of photography too. We're going to take a good trip to Southlink Productions, which is an incredible professional recording studio we have here in Otupoti that can be completely free, run by legendary Dunedin sound producer Nick Rowan, who is so generous with his time and generous with his knowledge, as well as showing a bit of mixing, music. We're going to go to the South Dunedin Library and see their great makerspace there. The South Dunedin Library is quite a new spot, but they have two incredible makerspace technicians. You got Lee Nicholson, who's like a recycled gear techie wizard. He's always just sending me videos of random little music-making things he's made out of recycled materials. And you got Rox Irwin Barrett, who is a, like, screen printing, DIY merch kind of extraordinaire. We're going to show you how to make your merch super cheap.
Make your merch. Like, we're talking like this is like the real, this is real gig stuff, right?
So yeah, this is.
So what's, you said make, what did you call it? South Dunedin?
The Makerspace.
Makerspace. It's a place where you make stuff. Is that?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
It's at the South Dunedin Library. So they have this big room full of heaps of things. They got like a 3D printer. They've got screen printing things. All of this, and just two people in there who want to help people. So you could go in, maybe you have a broken bit of tech. Lee can help you fix that. Maybe you have a design you want to make a screen printed t-shirt for. Rox can help you do that. They run heaps of workshops, they do heaps of stuff, and we're very lucky they're gonna let us come and pick their brains.
Right. So you if someone signs up for this for the program, What are they? Is it like 2 weeks of program or how does it work? You know, because you're always talking about stuff that's really important. You know, sessions with clever people doing smart things, and getting great knowledge. But is it almost like a school holiday program where you've got these things kind of laid out in a calendar? You kind of go, these are the bits we're doing, or is it something different?
So it's in the weekends. So
right. Okay.
Our first weekend will be 29th and 30th of August in 2 weeks. And then, the next weekend after that, those are our four workshops. So Saturday, Sunday. And then the next 2 weeks will be gigs. So Saturday, right. Sunday, two different gigs. And again, the next two weekends.
And where do you have the gigs?
The gigs, so we've got one at Te Whare Orukatia. We're doing two of them at Pearl Diver this year.
Okay.
And
I've heard of that one.
That one's great. And yours. We're doing one at yours as well.
Okay. I've heard of that. What was the first one you said?
Te Whare Orukatia. That's the theatre just off the Octagon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Really cool spot. That's one that our young people could hire and put on their own shows at.
Right.
We'll give them all of the details and how to ask, that kind of thing. Same with yours. It's like, I think something we want to do is show off how you can be a gigging musician and get around the 18-plus alcohol bars kind of situation.
Yeah.
Because there's so many barriers to people under 18 if they want to be a musician.
Yeah.
We sort of break those down.
Okay. Yeah. I've got some questions for you. Before we do, I'm going to get another word from our sponsor.
Lovely.
Dost Turkish Cafe serves authentic Turkish and Middle Eastern food made with love right in the heart of the city. Kebabs, shawarma, loaded fries and more, all made fresh to order using quality ingredients. Their family recipe falafel is a favourite, and they're the only place in Dunedin serving their popular cheesy baked potatoes loaded with your choice of fillings. Generous portions keep people coming back for more. Dost Turkish Cafe, just up from the Octagon at 15 Princes Street. Dine-in, takeaway and delivery.
A couple of questions popped into my head just as you were talking. First of all, how did Amped start? Like you said you were in the first kind of year. Who's like the instigator of this? Do you know?
I actually don't know.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to know everything, but it's like I'm assuming it's some kind of charitable trust or.
I think I'm not sure if the Dunedin Fringe has had hold of it the whole time, but perhaps the Dunedin Fringe Arts Trust.
Okay, so it's kind
perhaps,
of. Kind
I
of
actually don't know though. Maybe I shouldn't say that.
That's right. No one. It's only my wife listening, mate. Okay, fair, anyway, easy. So it's just between you, me, and her. So how many kids would you expect to be in that program on any given year?
Well, so far we have 32 signups.
Wow.
Which it's solid. I'm very happy with that number. I know last year they had 62.
Wow.
Which I think is maybe a bit too many.
Yes.
It's quite daunting to try and think of a room of 62 kids and me and my friends trying to look after them all. But we could do it. Please sign up.
Yep.
Don't feel like we have too many. The more people we can help, the better. I'm expecting probably like 35 to 40-ish.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like you said, there's still a week to get involved. And,
still a week to sign up.
And people get into that.
Yeah.
And then so what happens after? So once that four-week program of, like, you know, the learnings and the performing has gone. I'll jump back and I'll ask another question, actually. If someone comes along, they want to perform, right? Is there a bit where you go, nah?
Yeah. Oh, of course not.
No, like, that's, again, like, yeah. Just, you know, like, you want to perform, you perform, right? That's totally part of the process. I assumed it would be, but some people are, like, listening might, you know what I mean? Like, just want to break it down, because some people might go, well, you know, my kid's not that great, but if he goes, I don't want a bit of heartbreak in there as well, you know, it's actually, but no, they want to perform, they perform.
Well, that's the thing is, you know, if you're a young person, maybe you haven't performed yet, you have to practice at something to get better at it.
Yep.
And we give them that opportunity to start practicing, basically. Because playing in front of people is a completely different skill set to sitting alone in your bedroom playing your instrument.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without practice, you're not going to get much better. And no one goes to a gig and is sitting there thinking, oh, these guys suck.
No. You turn up for a reason, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole point, right? You're there, you're there to enjoy. I was like, you know, I've never been to a gig and I'm kind of sitting there going, I'm just waiting for that bloke to be rubbish.
You know, yeah, exactly.
I'm waiting to feel something and take something home with me, and that's what I'm here for. So how big? So you've got some fairly intimate performance areas, because yours is not huge, is it? So
yours is reasonably big.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. You could fit 100 people in there.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm used to Wembley Stadium, right? So like
100 is fairly small, I guess.
I consider that intimate. I've been blessed with being going to those big I was there at Nebworth when Robbie Williams had 170,000 people there, and I'm stood right at the front, right? So that was 2003. Now I'm showing my age. that's when I could stand up all day and not have to worry about it. But so. Would the audience, would there be 100 people that some places like yours, or, you know, is it again reasonably?
It'd be great if we could get 100 people there.
Yeah.
Like at Aussie 40 gigs, you don't often see more than 100. You get 50 people at a gig, that's a good gig.
That's a good gig.
You know,
yeah.
We don't, you know, it's important not to let that bother you as a musician.
No.
If you should play to 3 people the same way you'd play to 1,000, I think.
Agreed.
Because a lot of it is the joy on stage, you know?
Yeah.
Making the music's the fun part, I think.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, hopefully we can get 100 along. That would be amazing.
Yeah. So that performance starts at what time it goes? Because obviously you'll have a number of
Yeah.
People.
So they all start around 1 o'clock. So our Saturday shows will start at 1 o'clock until around 5.
Yeah.
And then our Sundays will be 1:30 to 5:30. We just had to push them very slightly later so Pearl Diver can clean up after their Saturday shows.
That's fair enough. I mean, they're providing the venue, right? So,
yeah.
And do they provide that gratis? Like, you know, is there
some of them do. Some of them you have to pay them. That's
yep.
kind of just how,
it's business.
How it works.
It's business, right? I mean, again, everyone deserves to be paid, right?
Absolutely.
That's the other side of it. So the young people, I'm assuming they don't get paid?
No, the gigs will be free.
Yeah, the gigs will be free, but so again, this is the experience of doing it. What happens after? Like, is it then you just go back into planning mode for the next year, or is there more things that happen throughout the year, or is it like on an annual cycle?
It's mostly on an annual cycle. So we have our basically month of doing it, and then I'll be, you know, I have my emails open if anyone wants to ask me any questions, they always can, as well as, like, I'll get offered opportunities for the young bands that I'll be able to pass on through to them. But after the program is finished, for the most part, we just leave them until the next year.
Yeah.
And hopefully they can use the things they've learnt to put on their own shows and start building their own audiences.
And do they come back year after year? Is it, you know, will you see certain and you get the benefit and the privilege of actually watching the progression of young talent actually come through from, like, you know, year one we were, you know, just
year 2,
year 3, year 4.
Yeah, I mean, I have my kind of Tane Art assistant coordinator, which is Kira Wallace, who started doing the program in 2020 and, you know, did it for 5 years and is now, 4 years, I think, and then started helping out with like mentoring and stuff afterwards and is now co-coordinator. So you can be involved your whole life if you really want to.
Right.
But I do think there's definitely a benefit to doing multiple years. You'll learn new things each year. Each year isn't the same.
Yeah.
As well as it's about the community. You meet the other musicians. You make friends. Maybe you'll join each other's bands. Maybe you'll form a new band out of members of other bands.
Right.
So I think there's definitely benefit. And we do have lots of people who come in year after year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's no restriction on, you know, you can start, you know, the amount of times that you can turn up and be involved. No,
just once you're out of school, we kind of let you free.
Yes, yeah, so I guess so, because I guess that's like 18. So it's in that sort of like 13 to 18. So there's,
yeah,
I guess there's 5 years kind of max-ish that you can kind of like.
Yeah, but afterwards, you know, we'll be asking people back to run
to bring
workshops.
Their talent, bring their talent and bring their expertise and have those conversations rather than being the people sitting there like. So how many bands are you in?
Right now I am in, I think, 4. Too many is the answer.
I don't think four's too many.
That's kind of how it works in Otiplotty. We're all in each other's bands.
Well, that's the important bit, isn't it? It's about community and about taking part, right? And also about making sure you're having a good time. So what are you, singer, drummer,
I'm mostly
guitarist?
A guitarist, but right. I do drum and I do play bass and I do sing. But guitar is my main instrument.
All right, so lead guitar.
Sure,
Do they call it that anymore? I don't know.
That's kind of like a rock and roll thing. I feel like it depends on genre, really.
Right.
We tend not to split it up between lead and rhythm.
Right, okay, fair enough. I don't know the difference, to be fair, mate.
It doesn't really matter.
I'm showing my ignorance about music full stop. I did tell you I was not a musician at the beginning of the show. So I'm just, you know, claiming some of that. So let's have those socials and those emails and those website stuff again, as we, you know, because we're getting to that point of the show, we're gonna run out of time. I want to make sure we get that plugged for anyone that's listening that actually wants to get involved. If they want to get involved for this year's stuff, what's the go?
So you can go visit ampedmusicproject.nz. All the information is there about sign-ups and that sort of thing, as well as you can go to all our socials, like our Facebook and our Instagram page, which is at ampedmusicproject. On all of those places, you'll find links to our Give a Little campaign.
So we've got any people out there that are just, you know, that $10,000 in a suitcase under the bed, they don't know what to do with. It sounds like a very good cause, looking after orangutan.
It'll be incredible.
And getting them to play more music. They can find that information on there.
And other ways you can support is if you have a young person that you look after who is a musician, help them with their gear, drive them to gigs, drive them to band practices, tell them about the Amped project, come see them play. It's all those sorts of things, the ways you can support.
Because I like to finish on the show just talking about generally about the Dunedin music scene is vibrant, but it is under pressure, isn't it? With our lack of suitable venues and everything else that kind of goes along with costs and funding and all those kind of bits and pieces. But we do have an absolutely fantastic music community that the people that are listening, if they're not part of, can you know, it's a welcoming community.
Absolutely.
To get into and to be part of.
There's so many places. If you go to Pearl Diver or you go to The Crown or you go to Yours in the weekend, there'll be some great music happening. You can check out the Aratoi Instagram has a great gig guide, as well as there's The Plan. Heaps of places you can go to see what's on. And if you haven't heard of the band, go see them. They're probably going to be your new favourite band. We have the best musicians in the world at Otipoti, and I'll stand by that.
When's your next gig?
When is it? I'm playing a house party next week, so no one's allowed to come. But I think that's the main one I have coming up. in, oh, I'm here's one. I'm playing at Dankfest on the 28th of August.
Oh,
Dankfest is an incredible punk noisy festival that's happening at the Crown Hotel, organized by Jörg, Lana and Gabe of the band Kuck. Always a great time, two nights, and they have an all-ages show during the day on the Saturday.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
What a great place to end the show.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming along, opening my eyes a little bit to the music, and wish you great success with the AMP project for this year, and maybe get you on the show again in years to come, and we can talk about it again. But if you just sit there while I round out the show, thank you very much, Zach Nichols, for being on the show.
Thanks, Richard, for having me.
No worries at all. Well, that's a wrap for this week. Thank you for tuning in. I've been Richard Knights, and you've all been wonderful. Remember, if you're looking for a robust, respectful adult debate about all things local and further afield, and a welcoming online community that doesn't take itself too seriously, come and find What's News Dunedin on Facebook and join our fun. On next week's show, we're talking to Marja Kaptagian, a trainer, educator, and menopause practitioner, and we look forward to seeing you next Friday at 12 on ORFM. And if you want to listen to the show again, or simply share it with your friends, you can find the podcast at oar.org.nz, or even on Spotify, YouTube, or your favourite podcast provider.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.